you know, some people think we're Scottish.
Idiots.
We state we're Irish many times in every episode.
Good. Do we not sound a wee bit Scottish? Can you give us a rendition of "We're Not American" in American?
We are not American.
What is this? That's like the liberal cunt American.
No, do your Matt Hardy.
We are not American.
Serious, man.
Fancy giving us an English accent?
All right. Ooh, lad, we're not English.
We are not French either.
And we're not from Northern Ireland either.
Mustard choppy. Let's go some putchers.
I can do The Undertaker. We're not The Undertaker either.
Yeah, not The Undertaker.
OSW Review. All Irish, all awesome. OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast, filmed in glorious grapple vision and encoded with blast processing, we chronologically critique the Hulkamania era pay-per-view by pay-per-view. Merry Christmas, lads.
Merry Christmas to you too.
Yeah, or Happy New Year, lads.
No.
It depends when I'm releasing the show. This is your host, Jay Hunter, Mr. One Take.
Take three.
Joined as ever by the Steve's Duh, Mr. Odyssey.
Alright.
And V1.
Alright.
It's the 1991 Survivor Series, and it's coming up right now.
I've had my eye on you. Yes, you. And you.
Have you been on the site? Got like some awesome reviews from the last show.
Yeah.
I asked them about the length, what they think of the longer show. And they loved it, and the best comment was, I love the length, no homo.
I love that.
I would imagine that the length is like the greatest barrier to entry. But once you get past your first entry, it would make you happy to see a longer one.
Once you go long, you can't go wrong.
It was like, is it no homo or no homo or no homo?
Question.
Survivor Series 1991, The Gravest Challenge. November 27th from the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, Michigan, home of the Legion of Doom. The attendance tonight is 17,500, with 300,000 TVs tuned in at home. At the commentary desk are Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. Not at the commentary desk tonight are Macho Man Randy Savage and Roddy Piper, who would do colour commentary on TV shows.
Was this pay-per-view on a Wednesday?
Yes, very good. It was Thanksgiving Eve.
Oh, is it?
Last Thursday of the month. But SummerSlam was on a Monday. So.
Weird.
Like, there's no Raw. Cold open as Gorilla Monsoon welcomes us to the show, and we're immediately shoehorned to a video package. Steve, did you appreciate that?
Love this. No fucking around. It's great.
Yes, 23rd November is the Wednesday before the pay-per-view. Jake subdued Randy Savage in the ropes and revealed a King Cobra from a snake bag. After some cajoling, masterfully edited here, because on the live show, it took the snake about 5 minutes to latch on. You can see kind of the remnants of it, because Jake kind of starts whacking off the snake. Finally, the Cobra agrees to latch on to Macho's arm, even drawing blood. Oh, looked great.
Yeah, oh, it looked awesome, but fuck that shit.
Yeah. But Vince commentated and planted the idea that the snake was devenomized, and I was like, hmm, that's less cool now, isn't it? Warrior in the last show, he got bit by a snake and it was full of venom and he had his visions or whatever, and I was like, he got rid of that now. Various officials, including Wurzel and Patterson and Liz and Piper, eventually freed him, and Macho did an awesome sell. He was like, he'd swing and he'd fall like he was slowly being paralysed by the venom.
One of the best segments I've ever seen in wrestling. I thought Savage was fucking phenomenal. Jake was great as well.
He was absolutely fantastic. Liz's incessant screaming in the background was, I wanted to choke her. Like, shut the fuck up, you're ruining the segment with your...
Who's this guy, Larry Foe?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
That will set the tone for the game.
I thought it was over the top, and I didn't think it was appropriate considering how many children were in the audience. And I still wouldn't agree with it today. They wouldn't do it today. They wouldn't even do this in the Attitude Era, would they? Like,
They did, but they didn't show it. It was backstage, Triple H in Austin. Triple H was left alone with a rattlesnake. And then they just cut to the back, and he's like, rah, rah, and he comes out next week, and he's got the venom scar.
Oh, well, that's...
And then he pulls it off and said, I didn't get bit at all.
Okay, I get you, was it Matt Tracker?
Oh, Mask.
Yeah, Venom. Do you like that?
Love
that.
Very good. Amazing, but pretty disgraceful to show this.
Alrighty. Afterwards, Macho Man put up a 900 number asking fans to call in and demand his reinstatement. And President Funny Jack Honey coalesced. He agrees. And he states that Jake is suspended tonight. Macho Man, yes, he's reinstated, but not tonight, not the next show. Not the one you paid for. So, yeah, for the first mention of night, they'll fight at this Tuesday in Texas in 10 days' time instead. It's like, they only have A show pay-per-views at the moment, so this is their first foray back into B shows to test the water, see, will you pay for a cheaper pay-per-view and swerve you, and we'll give you 10 days' notice? What do you think? Maybe.
Yeah.
The way it's worded, it makes it sound like Tony is not letting Macho compete, because he just said, I talked to his doctor and I can't in good conscience send Randy out there to wrestle. And it's like, you talked to his doctor, is he clear to compete or not? You know? It sounds like he is clear to compete, but nah, fuck it. Next pay-per-view, mate. Yeah. Tony has also banned reptiles from the ring, meaning, unfortunately, Ricky Steamboat fired.
Oh, no. However, it does mean that Bad News Brown can bring out his possums.
Excellent.
We're going to Ric Flair's force in his first Survivor Series, the Brains of the Million Dollar Man, the Power of the Warlord, and the outright cruelty of the Mountie. Piper, I'm not just going to slap you. All four of us are going to slap you.
Like the man said here, this is the unbeatable combination. You got the law right here, baby. You got the power right here. You got the money right here. And you got the class of the real world champion, Ric Flair. Virgil, take a look at how much this is shining, baby. I want my belt shining like that when you bring it back to me. Tell him, Warlord.
Everyone on this team knows exactly what he has to do. You, Bruce Bullock, will be no exception to that rule. And you'll find out that only the strongest survives in the end.
You know why we're going to win this match? Because we got good psychology. We're not thinking, what can the team do for us? We're thinking, what can we do for the team?
And there's bonus money in it, baby, for everybody.
Here we come. Woo!
Yes. No. Yes.
No.
All right, let us run down the pay-per-view. The first Survivor Series elimination tag match. the Intercontinental Champion, Bret Hart, Virgil, who doesn't have the Million Dollar Belt anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hang on, Million Dollar Man's got it. Shit. And the British Bulldog, and the returning Roddy Piper, who seems to have it in with Flair. Million Dollar Man, he has the belt again. So 6 days before Survivor Series, DiBiase versus Virgil for the belt, and with the aid of new heel, Barry Darso.
The Repo Man.
Yes.
A.K.A.
And a belt shot later, Ted DiBiase has regained his Million Dollar Belt and, yeah, fuck off. And they're taking on the Million Dollar Man with Sherry. What was she wearing? It's like she had like a swimming cap, but it had gold beads on it or whatever. It's awful looking. Yeah. Next up, the Mountie, Jacques Rougeau, with Jimmy Hart. And they're tagging with the Awesome Warlord, clad in a new awful shiny shoulder affair. What did you think of that?
I thought it looked cool.
No.
Horrible looking. It would look great if he was a cartoon character. And he has a new manager, Harvey Whippleman. See, Slick is off the TV now. And team captain, the real world champion, Ric Flair, accompanied by a 90s shell suit clad, the injured Mr. Perfect.
Perfect. He's wearing a red shell suit, under which a purple jumper, under which a luminous green t-shirt.
He looked like a packet of Starburst.
When he comes out, you know, and the crowd are... Probably most of them haven't been to a WCW show. So they don't really know his catchphrase. So it's kind of more... Who... Then...
Woo!
They've just seen it written on a page. Ooh. As we see that President Jack Tunney's office has blurred out Ric Flair's title.
Was this the WCW title? Because it did not look like it. It looked like a WWF tag team title to me.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
First pay-per-view, first WWF pay-per-view of the NWA and WCW legend Ric Flair. Let's give you a quick backstory about this, lad. Ric Flair survived a plane crash in 1975, broke his back, told he would never wrestle again, but he started wrestling again 10 months later, like a wrestler would. And he had a quick stint in Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWWF in 1976, and he got his first world title in 1981, relieving Dusty of the belt. So the true Iron Man of the mid to late 80s, wrestling from anywhere between 30 and 90 minutes with Barry Windham on house shows. He created the legendary faction, the Four Horsemen, in 1986 with Arn and Ole Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and managed by J.J. Dillon. And much like Hogan in the mid-80s, his promo and characters were like light years ahead of everyone else. And in 89, he had the trio of matches with Ricky Steamboat, which are lauded the best of all time. I bet you if we review them, they'll be shit. And in 1991, Jim Herd thought Ric Flair couldn't draw and handed him the Spartacus gimmick and a pay cut. And Ric Flair told him to fuck off. And so the Nature Boy jumped ship to the WWF, and here he is. So what is this controversy with Flair and the big gold belt? That's a rhetorical question. I'll tell you. WCW, alright, let's just bring it back to 1927. This is when it all began.
Frank Gotcha.
WCW, that is the wrestling company, which was formed when Ted Turner bought out JCP. And the NWA is the commissioning body that ran the territories. Now, in 1989, the territories were pretty much dead, so WCW had the exclusive rights to the NWA title, the big gold belt. So the WCW champion was the NWA champion, and in 1991, they were both Ric Flair. So Flair left WCW in July, so he was stripped of the WCW title, but the NWA still recognised him as champion until he signed with the WWF in September. So from July to September, he's gone around with the NWA belt, and they're cool with it. Meanwhile, WCW, they made a new ugly belt. State of it.
I don't know it at all.
I'll have to show you a picture. Awesome. Here, it's on the screen now. And they made a new world title, and they gave that to Lex Luger.
Yeah, my boy.
Oh, poor guy, because they were just chanting for Flair the whole night.
Yeah.
Oh.
I wouldn't have been.
Flair returned the NWA belt eventually to WCW at the end of October, but not before WWF made a replica belt and used that on TV.
Nice.
So they opted themselves to digitally blur out the NWA Big Goldie to avoid a legal injunction. And then NWA were going, You can't do this, or we're bringing you to court. And the WWF then used the tag belt and blurred that out. And they're going, what the fuck is this? And that's what we have here.
Back then, they had no respect for the live crowd at all.
No. Even though their entire business was based off live gates, because pay-per-view was still only in its infancy, you know?
It's shocking.
This is pretty much Vince in a nutshell. He has no respect for wrestling fans.
Yeah.
In this day and age, either. He thinks all wrestling fans are stupid and idiotic and like what they're told.
So Ric Flair debuted in the WWF the 9th September on Primetime Wrestling, and it was associated with Bobby Heenan and Mr. Perfect, and they were loving it. On the 28th September, Flair decides to visit Randy Savage and Piper. Actually, Piper is Flair's real-life best mate, who'd been running him down since before his arrival. Flair smacks Piper with his belt, and the resulting fracas causes Vince takes a chair shot. A lovely wooden chair shot. And yeah, Piper returns to action thanks to his scuffle with Flair and continues their feud from Mid-Atlantic over a decade ago.
Who booked Ric Flair, who is known as the real world champion? He is the actual best in the world. Why'd you put him with a manager who's not an actual manager? He's like a non-wrestler now.
Perfect.
Yeah.
He's in Heenan's camp.
Because they both got blonde hair, I bet you, is what Vince said.
That's perfect.
I didn't mean that.
It's probably just to have an entourage, make him seem more important by having his
one man entourage. That's not an entourage.
It's a mantourage.
Heenan challenges Monsoon to recite the rules of the Survivor Series.
He should have gotten me too.
He does well until he gets flustered at the end. Of course, this is just rhetoric to explain the rules to us and everyone in TV land. Kick off with Piper versus DiBiase as the crowd rally behind the Canadian. Sherry interferes on DiBiase's behalf and Piper willingly contracts a hooker mouth disease. Monsoon quips he's living dangerously. Because she's a whore, obviously. Brett has some lovely exchanges with DiBiase and Flair, and Roddy sends Flair packing with an Undertaker flurry of weak punches. These punches. And Flair flops outside. We see a shot of Jimmy Hart cheering on the Mountie backstage as we're informed that managers have been barred from ringside post-Sherry spot. Bulldog does an extremely impressive few reps and posting Power Slam. There's a sensical schmoz as the heels bail into the ring as Bulldog hits his finisher. Good. Flair delivers a chop from the top rope and illegally gets the three. So as you've established, no tag necessary here, round robin. You're not allowed to usher anyone outside of the ring now. That's interesting. I just thought the Million Dollar Man gimmick, that was created especially for Ted DiBiase. When they were signing him, they offered him the gimmick. Here's what we got for you. And I thought Flair would have made a great Million Dollar Man.
He didn't need a gimmick though.
That's true. But I thought I can easily imagine him doing the Million Dollar Man gimmick. It's like, and everybody's got a price for the Million Dollar Man. Woo!
I thought, like, Flair, he's charisma. He is Mr. Charisma.
Yeah.
But, I mean, compared to these other lads in this fucking roid-infested roster, he looks really puny. Like, he's got real small legs, and then, okay, his kind of torso is fine. And then he's got this, like, bouffant of blonde hair. He looked gay. He looked fucking gay.
I suppose he did model his robes after Liberace as well.
Yeah.
And he has a very boring outfit.
I wasn't a big fan of Virgil's candy stripers.
The Simon Cowell pants.
The Simon Cowell pants.
He got them free at the circus. Fucking carny. Virgil does a much shitter Taker punch flurry on Flair, and I thought it was very giving of Flair. I wouldn't let him do that shit. They're five times shitter than what we saw 2 minutes ago.
Fucking Virgil's still over. He's still feeding off.
He does have his own song now.
He does, and it's a good song, and he used that.
Is it a good song?
Yes.
What is this song?
He's like, that's just rubbish. It's not like that. Virgil was still using that when I went to the point in 94 there.
Nice.
Love it. Turnabout is fair play as Warlord slaps on the master lock in the schmoz, and in the schmoz, Brett nails him with a second rope double axe handle, and illegal man Piper gets the three. So yeah, of course, Survivor Series rules, you get pinned with a clothesline and a double axe handle, you know.
Sorry, Virgil was battering the Mountie, and the Mountie went to tag in someone, and they all turned their backs on him. That was a bit weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. Maybe he was like, they didn't want to get in the ring with...
with Virgil.
Maybe he smells. 35 minutes into the pay-per-view, and only two eliminations. I was going, Jesus Christ, come on. And my prayers were answered. Piper does his fun eye poke spot on Flair as the match disintegrates into a schmoz, as Flair does his turnbuckle spot to the outside. The grand Piper Duggan finish as the ref calls for the bell and the five brawlers get eliminated.
I was going to say here, what a fucking cop-out ending. I'm not even going to bother going into it because I'm sure Steve has a few paragraphs on it.
Believe it or not, I don't. I just have like two lines of fury about it and then that's it.
What have you written?
Referee DQs everyone except Flair, and he's the sole survivor, and I'm fucking furious and I hate this match. And then to rub salt into the wounds, Piper batters him more and sends the real world champion packing. Like the bitch I'm sure he's going to be.
So this means that Flair has backdoored himself into a win at 22:47. Then the faces clean house as Piper's theme plays.
I thought this match was really good up until that point.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed the match, but at this pace, this match would have taken an hour and a half if everyone was going to get eliminated. It's like, holy shit, man. Mm. But it was quite loaded with name talent.
Yes, I like 6 out of 8 of these lads.
Who don't you like?
I'll let you guess.
Bulldog.
No.
Well, awesome. I'm sure you're still furious over that tenor. Correct. So Virgil's one.
That was me.
And Piper.
Correct. Very good.
Well done. I very much like Flair and I appreciate him being here, but I didn't like his cheap win. This is not how a real world champion who you stole from WCW gets treated. You know, he doesn't get to prove his claim to the WWF throne in this pay-per-view.
Mm.
So that was kind of disappointing.
That makes perfect sense. But I thought any time he was in the ring, the match just went up a level. I really enjoyed that stuff.
I totally agree with that, yeah. I thought he was great. I just thought the booking of him was really poor. He pinned one guy in this match, but he pinned him with a really bad top rope elbow drop. Where's your figure four? Is Piper not letting you do it because he's been using it? Or are they building up to a figure four match? Or just...
Of course, they're leading up to it. Yeah, it's going to be Ric Flair versus Greg Valentine. The Flair flop versus the timber bump.
And that's... Yeah, the figure four versus the figure four.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Hopefully that will happen.
My rates are getting low enough.
Only if Ronnie Garvin was brought back
special referee.
Yeah, referee or something.
State of your bouffant hair. A jubilant Heenan, who's been playing cheerleader for Flair all night, literally picks up a phone and calls Perfect and Flair to celebrate.
That was awesome. Yeah. It was a big fucking 1980s like rotary phone. You know? Takes about 17 minutes to point
someone up. Hello, operator. Mean Gene is at the interview podium. It used to be Eggside, no egg this year. Welcomes Randy Savage. He's clad in a wonderful green and purple number.
It's a bruiser bar.
Because I was going to ask you, what bar is this? Because there's a man...
Also a stinger bar.
Green
and purple as well.
Bruiser sounds better though.
Yeah.
Because there's a match with Savage and HBK, and it's like HBK is dressed in it's like white and red strawberry.
Freaky foot.
Oh, so he's a freaky foot, a freaky fruit.
There was freaky foot. It was like a big red and white foot with a big chocolate toe. Head gout.
So Randy Savage dressed as it was like. He's a wibbly wobbly one.
It is good.
Max the Lion just cracking one up.
He says that 97% of the thousands of letters to Jack Tunney have been pro reinstatement. So 3% trolls.
Yeah, that's great.
Were there trolls back then? Trolls was like a new thing.
Do you remember the Royal Rumble 1991? It was Slaughter versus the Ultimate Warrior, and everyone asked who's going to win the main event. Everyone said Warrior, 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 Warrior.
Sergeant Slaughter, number one.
You fucking trolls.
We'll get to Sergeant Slaughter now.
Yes. So, yeah, 3% people took the time out to write a letter to Jack Tunney to say no, keep him on the bench.
Yeah, they actually liked him on commentary. Oh, God.
He says hearing Liz cry during his attack was the worst pain.
I said that.
You did.
He agrees with me.
He probably said it before you.
Not in this episode.
Exactly.
As he plugs his return match at this Tuesday in Texas, Liz predicts failure at the show.
That's number two, by the way, for just mentions of Tuesday in Texas.
Oh. Yeah.
And we will lose count.
Oh, yeah.
No, of course, Liz says, yeah, he'll probably win, hopefully. And
did you notice that serious business, Macho Man, you know, bitten by a snake, poisoned, and they're all smiles, and, you know, Liz comes out, and she's like, you know, oh, yeah, you know what I mean? She does all that.
I was poisoned. At this point, I was like, fuck, is this pay-per-view a three-hour ad for this Tuesday in Texas?
Yeah.
I was like, this, geez, what's going on?
Liz comes out and says, even I'm going to be there in Texas on Tuesday.
Match number two, the Survivor Series elimination match. Fuck yeah, gimmicks galore. Weird hooting heel army music plays as the core. Colonel Mustafa, the Iron Sheik, and General Adnan come to the ring. They bushwhacker bounce to the ring. Didn't the Truth Commission do that as well in 97?
Did they?
Yeah, yeah. And I'll splice them, we'll see. And if not, it'll be cut. Yeah, joined by the Berserker.
My love for you is
like a drunk berserker. Would you like to make him fuck berserker? That's beautiful, man.
He lives his gimmick, though, doesn't he? You know, when nobody's watching, he's still doing his... What is it? Hoss, is it?
Hoss.
Oh, yeah. Hoss. He's yeah.
So, yeah, the Berserker here, a.k.a. the Viking, John Nord... Nord the Barbarian, whichever you like. He was in from the AWA on the Pacific Northwest, and he had similar manners and gimmick was a tribute to Bruiser Brody, who was stabbed to death in a shower after a wrestling match in Puerto Rico. It was horrific. That was a disgusting scandal.
Supposedly that, like, ruined wrestling over there.
Rightly so.
Mm.
He was stabbed. There were witnesses, including Tony Atlas. Everyone knew what happened. The man walks off scot-free. And fucking Atlas comes back a few years later and works a few dates.
Well, you know, Atlas can't ratten them because then he won't get his money for work in Puerto Rico, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just how it is.
The Berserker, he won his matches by count-out. He throw people over the top ropes and that's his preferred method of winning.
And wait patiently.
We call it the Duggan. And the shouting hoss as
he
well.
He probably won't think that's great if he ever gets into a title match.
Pretty low aspirations. Pretty happy to have a payday. What did you think of his sword and shield and horned helmet and furry boots?
All amazing.
All amazing. I think this gimmick would have been so much better if it was put on someone else. Because this guy doesn't look menacing at all. He just looks like an upbeat homeless man.
I think that's quite like kind of early 90s, especially seeing a new generation era. Everyone's pretty positive and happy. No one's threatening or angry. Like Yokozuna, he never struck me as an angry bloke. He looked like a lovely guy. That's man. Be great going out on the boozer with him. Unless you have to carry him home on. Next lad, the Skinner. Much like the Berserker, the Skinner.
Skinner! Skinner!
You ruined him now.
I didn't even think of that one.
Skinner makes his pay-per-view debut, but sat out SummerSlam. He used to tag with Stan Lane as the Fabulous Ones in the AWA, but here Steve Kern is a yokel alligator hunter from the Florida Everglades.
They're running out of gimmicks, aren't they?
Yeah.
I have something that might change your mind about it. Alright, so his gimmick is he chewed and spit tobacco and used an alligator claw as a foreign object. Okay, you know the way Boss Man feuded with the Mountie, and that's like the mirror match of heel and face? Well, someone who skins reptiles, who would his natural opponent be?
Steamer.
Yes!
Ah.
They feuded on TV, but Steamer was gone by Survivor Series, so they don't get to revisit it here, unfortunately.
Good stuff, then.
I thought he looked cool. I thought he looked far more terrifying than Berserker.
I thought he looked like the littlest lumberjack from Ring of Honor.
Oh, but Grizzly Redwood?
Yeah, sounds good.
Obviously, whoever thought of this gimmick had just recently watched Crocodile Dundee, right?
Jim Bone and a blonde old snake.
You would have been perfect to play him. Fucking Wurzel in there. It's a shame he wasn't Irish that you called him Crocodile Dundalk.
You're always talking about Crocodile Dundalk.
That's because I wanted to have him in Dundalk. It's a gimmick I thought about 4 years ago. I just keep pushing it, keep pushing it. Crocodile Dundalk will take off.
This match hasn't even kicked off.
Oh god, look who's out next.
Yeah.
Who's the next
old
lad?
Man Hercules.
He fell on black days. He looks so awful, this man. It's like, I think I made a note at SummerSlam that in the 3 months since we'd last seen him, he'd take a bit of a nosedive in terms of image.
Yeah.
Lads. What do you think of him now?
Where are we now? 20 pay-per-views in a row?
Number 19.
Oh, will he get to 20?
Will he get to 20?
And does Tuesday in Texas count? If that's the other point.
Yeah, it's on pay-per-view.
Right, yeah. Okay. Will he get to 20?
Hopefully, fingers crossed. Yeah. All right, so...
When's it on again, Steve?
Yeah, and the remaining half of Herc and Jerk, the menopausal Hercules. Clean shaven and shave those sideburns. He's looking well old. All right. Versus the face team, the Texas Tornado, clad in Ken Shamrock's black and red robe. Ken Shamrock had a black and red robe?
Yeah, yeah.
And a red and black robe as well. Mm. OC's boy, El Matador.
Yes, finally the debut.
What a lot of balls, man.
Hey, Tito Santana, how about that?
Arriba!
Very nice.
Tito also sat out SummerSlam. He took time off TV to go to Mexico, not Spain, to learn bullfighting. Thinking it would help him in the ring.
This is all good stuff. If somebody comes charging towards him, he can step out of the way and then get battered. And what have I got? I like his pants. He's got brand new shiny pants.
Yep.
But he still can't get over.
No.
Nothing's getting this guy over. Unless it's some kind of review show 20 years in the future.
It's funny with Tito that Garvin was just that bad that he became good, but Tito was never that bad that he became good, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I
absolutely don't see what you're saying. I think you're a cunt for saying that. It lets you know that Garvin was good because he was good.
Hashtag Garvin for Hall of Fame.
Hashtag Garvin for Hall of Fame.
They're tagging with Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the fucking turncoat, a face, Sergeant Slaughter.
I have written here, Slaughter is face. How, when, why, promo package, reasoning, anything, please.
When they're all doing a huddle at the start, like the faces are doing a huddle over in one corner, and Slaughter was there, I was like, Jesus, the idiot walked over to the wrong fucking team. What's going on?
I remember looking at the graphing, and I was like, which is the face side?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who turned her? After jobbing the Hogan twice on pay-per-view, WWF aired a vignette of him going, please, take me back, America.
And that's enough to turn your face.
So he apologised for affiliating with Iraq, 28 September Superstars. And over the following weeks, he would go on location to various US monuments, and he'd campaign that,
I want my country back!
Oh, and that's the statement.
That's all it was.
And yeah, but that was enough.
I would have thought that was almost a heelish thing to do. You know,
pandering.
Pandering. Yeah. Shocking. And I mean, the crowd, he is not over in any way, shape, or form.
His crowd have not gotten over his last role at all.
Who would trust this man? If you have really strong beliefs and convictions, that's fine. But if you completely flip-flop on them, credibility gone.
Yeah.
The Matador trusts him.
Yeah, much like Volkov and the Boy Scouts of America, he's turned face after losing a couple of times and joins with Jim Duggan. Monsoon says there's flags everywhere as we get a shot of no flags. Slaughter gone from win the world title at the Royal Rumble, main event WrestleMania, main event SummerSlam, fucking gimmick jobber match at Survivor Series. And again, Tornado is wasted here. Oh well.
Shame.
Monsoon admonishes the ref for the slow pace of the match. And yeah, nice fucking bowl job. Did you see the beetle wig on him?
Did you see the berserker? Somebody gives him a kick to the boot. I think it's Slaughter. And he does the splits. You shouldn't be doing the splits. Like.
No.
Just diminishing the scariness of
it. Yeah.
Berserker and the Hacksaw have the worst 30 seconds of wrestling I've seen in a while. So these two cannot go at all. Terrible.
Yeah.
Yep. Sergeant Slaughter with a comb over. Did you see him? The big state of it.
Yeah.
Interest. That's a heel thing to do. Comb over. Admit your balls. Interesting seeing Sheik and Duggan in the ring again, since they were initially both fired and suspended for killing kayfabe by being caught in a DUI segment back in 87. There are better rivals at the time. They got pulled over because they're swerving in the car and they find to have cocaine, marijuana and under the influence driving. And the whole world found out, holy shit, wrestling's fake. The better rivals are driving down the road together.
That's really bad. Yeah. That's terrible.
The Sheik, obviously he didn't agree with the face turn. You turn face by feuding with your former partner. So you remember Volkov beat up Zhukov, and Slaughter here, he can beat up Mustafa and cement your face turn. They must be so easily convinced. Like, if you want to infiltrate the face team, just go rogue and batter your mate, you know.
Later on in the show, they show you how to do a slow turn.
Absolutely.
This shite here is not the way to do it. Like,
Slaughter hits his former pal, of one pay-per-view by the way, with an atomic drop and clothesline and gets the pin on Sheik. Uncharacteristically, Berserker goes for a pin after an exposed turnbuckle spot and big boot, but he doesn't get the pin. The fuck was that? Then Hercules smacks Slaughter into the ring post, but he can't get the three on Slaughter. What's that about?
Yeah.
Should have just elbow off the second rope.
Elbow off the second rope.
An atomic drop and clothesline puts you down, but not a ring post. Tornado twirls over here. He twirls over Herc. Very impressive. And tags in Tito, who does a bullhorn impression. Did you like it?
Oh, man, I missed that.
Kind of goes, Zole.
Lovely.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah. I think he's getting his character wrong. He's playing the man fighting the bull, not the bull.
And he hits, this time, instead of a flying forearm, it was like a downward flying forearm.
It's a flying donkey punch.
Ooh.
And sends Herc to the showers. Berserker doing the bulk of the grunt work for the heels, and that's to be expected, considering his teammates are Sheik, Herc, and Skinner. So blind tag to Slaughter, who's schoolboy Skinner, who will retire to the alligator swamp. Okay, so it's 4-on-1, faces looking to clean sweep. Slaughter whips Nord into Duggan's running clothesline. And yep, 1-2-3, the faces get it done with a clean sweep at 14-17.
Slaughter was the legal man. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Duggan, so it shouldn't have counted. This fucking match, lads. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, what do you think of this match?
Yeah, a load of shit.
Absolute pants.
Yeah. Awful. Nothing good to say about it, really.
Just before we go, I was going to say, storyline-wise, there was a bit of reshuffling right before the pay-per-view because Neidhart was supposed to be on the face team and he was bumped off the pay-per-view and he was replaced with Slaughter so Anvil could sell the beatdown by Flair and the Beverly Brothers.
Okay.
And likewise, Hercules got a payday number 19, filling in for a debuting and departing Big Bully Busick.
Who?
Is that Blacktop Bully?
Not Big Cock Bully.
No, it's,
Big Bully Busick. He was a carny street tough with a bowler hat, red turtleneck, and impressive mustache. he was like,
yeah, he sounds like a turn of the century English circus guy.
Yes, yes, he was. He, of course, they put.
But it's 91.
1891. So he'd go to, there's a plant in the crowd, some kid with balloons. He'd get the balloons and pop them or releases, and they go up. And he's like, oh.
It sounds absolutely awful.
It was and is. Yeah, so his biggest contribution to the WWF was his manager that came in with him, Harvey Whippleman. He was feuding with Sid and the Brooklyn Brawler, I'm the bully here, prior to leaving. Both Anvil and Buzik are featured in the November 91 series card preview. But they're gone.
Can we just see a picture of him? Thank you.
I'll splice some footage to fucking... Yeah. He looks exactly like you'd think a carnival tough bully would look like.
I think it's a rather interesting gimmick. Put along the lines of he's demented.
Yeah.
Not that he legitimately is.
A bully from the 20s.
Yeah. Frozen in the future, but found in the past.
Call Heyman. Get him in here ASAP. Cut to a hilarious post-match pre-tape of the faces complimenting each other, touching each other's dicks, while plugging the Coliseum home video release. And Duggan tries to get a...
Way to go, team! Way to go, team! Yeah!
Way to go, team! Way to go, team chant. And it fucking dies a death.
Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me.
Another Mean Gene interview segment, this time with Randy's opponent, heel Jake Roberts.
And his jumper.
But it is Christmas.
I'm actually he's the same jumper he wore the last time we mentioned it.
But now he's got bin bag trousers as well. Black Rain would be so proud.
So we get the heel Jake Roberts, son snake bag, a Vec cowboy boots, leather jocks, and a wonderful Christmas Gansey. Cut to a child with a nicer Christmas Gansey. It was white and had a reindeer on it. He was like, oh, fuck you. And he had that awesome trust me heel song.
Yeah, it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
He maintains his innocence as the two plug this Tuesday in Texas. An odd blank Silver Vision banner pops up, presumably hiding a graphic plugging the show, because you can't order the pay-per-view in 2012.
All right.
2013. C's favourite, a video recap montage leading up to the Gravest Challenge. First ever non-elimination tag match in Survivor Series history. It's the WWF Championship on the line between Hulk Hogan and The Undertaker.
When the card was announced, you'd be like, where the fuck did this come from? Like, how did The Undertaker jump the queue, you know? But there wasn't much of a queue, I suppose. That was the problem. There was nobody else. Fair fucks to him. I mean, it was right place, right time for The Undertaker. They were finished with the Slaughter, you know, pro-America thing. They were not ready for Flair. It seems like they didn't know what they wanted to do with Flair at this point. So there was basically no one else.
What I want to know is, what happened to Sid? At the end of last month, we were all convinced that Sid is next.
Yeah.
Well, we all knew, but
yeah.
We were still convinced.
He was not figured into this match. He was in a different match. This is the business of the Survivor Series and SummerSlam, where everyone's got two feuds. You'll do one of them on TV and one of them on pay-per-view, and everyone's unhappy. You know? Hogan was on the funeral parlor, 16th November Superstars, and was confronted by the real world champion, Ric Flair. And maybe I'll just play this segment. It's fucking awesome.
Here comes the alleged real world champion, Ric Flair, getting a bird's eye view of Hogan. Hogan reaching for the standing casket as Flair now confronting Hulk Hogan.
This is what we're seeing.
Come on over here. You know how long I've been waiting for this very moment, big man, huh?
Hey,
you know
you.
How long the real world champion has heard the name Hulk Hogan. Get up! 24-inch pythons, big man. Don't be ashamed of those butterflies you got rumbling in that stomach right now. Because, big man, I just burst that bubble you've been living in, and I'm here on your doorstep with the real world championship belt. Compare the two. In closing, what are you gonna do, Hulk Hogan, when Ric Flair runs wild on you?
Let me tell you.
Out there, be at your beckoning call.
Wait a minute!
But Hulk Hogan
from the high! Right there. Look! It's the Undertaker with the air! Undertaker hammering Hulk Hogan from behind with the urn, coming out of the coffin. Look at that! They're all over him! Flair, Undertaker, all over Hulk Hogan, trying to choke the life out of him! Undertaker, there with Ric Flair!
Let's go!
What's he doing? Reaching down. Boom. Undertaker. Standing over Hulk Hogan.
Get him out of here, I'm gonna kill him.
Ric Flair, the Undertaker.
Flair. He challenges the WWF champion Hulk Hogan, who accepts, and he's still got the NWA/WCW belt, but it's poorly digitized. Taker emerges from the casket and lays out Hogan with an urn. The heels double team as Macho and Piper leave the commentary desk and come to Hogan's aid. Yeah, I was thinking Hogan and Macho and Piper versus Flair and Jake and Taker. That would be a fucking awesome Survivor Series match.
Yeah, but nobody's going to jump.
Put in Slaughter.
Yeah.
And Duggan. Garvin.
No, there's
Hall of Fame.
Two things that I thought were worth noting in this segment. It was a great segment. Hogan and Flair facing off. Hogan with the world title, Flair in with his world title. But Flair has been going since, what, the 70s? We're now in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure his stuff with Steamer was amazing, but at this point, you would think he would be on the kind of the downslope of his career. He was going 20 years later, so was Hogan, but you weren't to know that at the time.
Well, yeah, like, both of them at this point are still past their prime, you know? Hogan's gimmick is a lot further past its prime than Flair's is.
Flair's is quite fresh at the moment.
Yeah, it's fresh
but
for us.
His stuff with Steamer was only in 89 and him doing his 19
matches. It's also fresh for a lot of the fans.
Yeah.
His promos are awesome as well.
Absolutely. The other thing that I quite liked Savage and Piper coming out with the chairs. Flair and Taker no-sold completely. You'd expect Taker to do it, you know, but Flair, you just kind of went, got away. Then after that, they just were, I'm not hitting you with a chair again. Maybe try again, you know?
Well, I suppose baby faces will hit you the least amount of times necessary.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Doesn't strike blood feud to you.
No, it doesn't. No, stop that, you.
So we end that vignette segment with a shot of Hogan with his cross on his chest and the chain on the ground. I thought it mirrored Andre doing the same to Hogan before WrestleMania 3.
Very good.
He must draw inspiration from, you know, Jesus and America.
And probably both. Talks about Jesus. Oh, say your prayers. What am I saying? Of course, say your prayers.
Well, Jesus is American, so it's, you know. You've seen him in the jumpsuit. Taker versus Hogan. Yeah, that was the hope since Taker's debut. They always had big plans for him. And it was penciled in around SummerSlam. And then it was cemented when his house show feud with the Warrior outdrew Hogan and Slaughter over the summer. So this was thought to, we should just, we'll build him up, we'll keep him strong. WrestleMania 8, Hogan versus Taker. It's going to be great. But it was all thrown out the window, fast forwarded, when Flair hit the scene. And so we get this extremely messy booking. Jake and Randy are feuding now. So when Warrior left after SummerSlam, Sid replaced him in the Jake feud until they could convince Savage to return full time. Wait, that hasn't happened yet. Never mind. The Gravest Challenge. The Gravest Challenge. The Undertaker with Paul Bearer versus the WWF champion, Hulk Hogan. Cut to a shot of a kid chuckling instead of being scared. Well, Steve was right then.
Yep.
We see a casket at ringside with a Hulkamania logo. It's pretty awesome. And then we get the entrance by Hogan, which is really cool. Gets a big pop. He comes to ringside and topples over the casket. And then he points and goes, "You!" to Undertaker. I thought it was a really cool entrance. The Undertaker at this point is undefeated, much like the Sheik. King Kong Bundy, Andre, Zeus, and Quake before him. He was undefeated. Let's see how he fares.
Hogan, he's not on form tonight. He's looking a little bit disinterested. I wonder why. We shall see.
Also looking a bit slimmer.
Yeah.
Hogan takes off his bandana and then throws it at Taker. And it hits Taker. And Taker doesn't flinch at all. But Hogan does. It's really weird. It's like he throws it and goes, "Oh fuck, I kind of hit him there." And like, Taker just didn't give a shit.
It would have been great if the bandana just planted itself on Taker's face. And he can't do anything. He can't sell it. Like,
surely he'd be like, Hogan sells to start off as Taker gives the camera a few eye rolling holds. Multiple Taker doesn't get knocked off his feet spots. Taker slaps on an endless facial claw. It's not a patch on the Magna Claw.
This is the same claw that Kane brought back when he came back with his mask.
Did he get booed relentlessly?
Well, he did by me.
Yeah, that would kill the crowd of lesser characters. But no, it's fine here. And did you see the biggest Hulker mark in the crowd? Front row, decked out and made.
Waving the crowd on.
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Year 8. You were a grown man. Yeah, shut the fuck up. Never mind. No, I took offence to this, lad. You were cheering the fucking stalwart of a cunt that won't let anyone else have the world title. No, I didn't appreciate this, dude, at all. After a lovely flying clothesline, we see Taker worshipping the urn, which has a massive dent in it. Oh, presumably from Hogan's oxbutt. Blammo! Taker hits the tombstone, but fucking Hogan gets up immediately before he can go for a cover.
This is the point where you're worried for Taker that he's going to go the way of the earthquake and eventually end up in the oddities. You know, this is borderline for Taker right here. He needs to win this match or he's going to go away very quickly.
When the earthquake took out Hogan first with his earthquake splash, he was out for a few months. He hasn't hit the tombstone yet. This is his first tombstone. And it's...
On the version that I watched, there were boos for Hogan throughout the entire match. And the boos reached their loudest when he was getting up after his cell job. So the fans had fucking none of it. Although, to be fair, up until that point, I thought Hogan was putting Taker over quite well. He was getting battered.
Like, yeah, and that, but that makes the tombstone all the worse.
But that's his gimmick, though. You know,
the gimmick that I'd never sell.
Like, that's that also Taker's gimmick at this point. Yeah. Is the no sell.
They should have a three-way with Hawk then.
I'd be still going on today. One of them's dead.
Boo. Yeah, Hogan works the crowd for a big slam to Taker, which signals the closing sequence. Flair comes to ringside as Hogan sells an ankle grab by Bearer, which he didn't do. Bearer must have missed his cue. Hogan clocks Flair and resumes the spot, which Bearer gets right this time. You know, grabs his ankle. Taker opportunistically positions Hogan for a second tombstone as Flair offers a chair for Hogan's head. Taker hits possibly the safest tombstone in history. There's about a foot between Hogan's head and the chair, and Flair disposes of the chair.
Taker's knees took the full force of that chair. No man more than Taker pisses me off when it comes to selling chair shots. You know,
the hand way up,
oh,
you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but it all comes down to the camera angle. Change the fucking camera angle when this is going to happen.
Yeah.
We saw right close up here the tombstone not onto the chair. And it looked fucking terrible.
Taker crosses Hogan's arm and the ref counts 1, 2, 3. And we have a new WWF champion, the Deadman, at 12:43. Yeah, holy shit, how about that?
Yeah. Jay, is this the spot where Hogan has since claimed Taker fucked up his neck?
Yes.
Has he watched it? Because he's clearly, like, many inches above his head making contact with the chair.
Yep, he says this in his book, "Oh, Taker fucked my neck up, man, and that's why I didn't kick out at one." And that's a complete horseshit.
What really annoyed me then is the disgusting commentary, mainly Monsoon, talking about there is a footballer who became paralysed a couple of weeks back. Hogan went to visit him, and now Hogan might be paralysed.
Well, maybe the footballer can visit him.
No, I wasn't going for a bit here. I'm really, really annoyed about this. Like, you're taking reality and comparing it to a fake TV show. I thought it was horrendous. But anyway, go on.
I was annoyed that Kevin Dunn completely dropped the ball by not having a close-up on that big hook on Mark's face when it went 1, 2, 3. He was distraught. But you had to look at it from the other side of the ring. I was like, oh, I want to see. I'll lick your tears. It'd be so sweet. Oh, it's so sad. Oh, he was devastated. It was great. So the officials Wurzel, Garcia and Patterson get a payday as they attend to Hogan. He sells for the next Ice Age about the same length as he would have celebrated, as shots of the kids too young to know what's going on have a vacant stare on their face.
You know the way in wrestling they try their hardest to not let you see them talking, and Hogan's just lying there talking to Wurzel and the rest of the lads. So, you know, it's so different from what's normal in WWF that it looked kind of real. Like,
it's like, oh, give me a freaky foot.
Giovanni, them wibbly wobblies.
You know what? I fancy your cornetto. I don't want to throw out kayfabe because I'm not sure of the booking plans. Well, I am actually. But, alright, Taker, new guy, gets the belt, the heel. Hogan doesn't have the belt anymore, unjust. They're getting a plan in place where he can somehow win the belt back at Mania.
It seems like they're going Hogan versus Flair.
Yeah.
So if somehow Flair could get the belt, that would set up perfectly.
Yeah,
you know? We sorted.
Yeah, so hopefully, they have 2 pay-per-views to do it, so maybe, who knows? Most people.
I was watching some of this with Andrea. And she made a great point, as she always does. Why would an Undertaker be dead? And she's right. An Undertaker doesn't put makeup on his own face. He's clearly supposed to be dead. Or a corpse.
Yeah.
Or a zombie. But he's
surely
an Undertaker.
Paul Bearer should be the Undertaker. And Taker should be the zombie or
exactly.
something. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It could all be saved by saying he's not dead.
But why
is just an Undertaker who is an extremely morbid person. His life is death.
Fucking groups.
But he does have supernatural powers.
Mm.
Is he the reanimated corpse of an Undertaker who used to work in Paul Bearer's gaff?
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what he is. That's exactly what he is.
All right, we'll go with that.
Hey!
Text Andrea now. Backstage, Mean Gene gets Piper's thoughts on what just transpired. He unsurprisingly disapproves and compares the heels to the Adams family and says ding dong a lot.
Oh, it's back again. Fucking joke just won't go away.
It's like Crocodile Dundee.
You're just jealous you didn't come up with it. That's all.
So, that is the halfway point, and it's time for the ad break questionnaire. Alright, so the question is, what gimmick does Steve want to see in OSW Review more than most? Now, the question from the Ad Break questionnaire was, which gimmick does Steve want to see in OSW the most? The answer is... Skinner! Crocodile Dundee.
You're just fucking jealous. That's all.
Fucking Charles Waters. Sean Mooney is with a jubilant Ric Flair and chuckle brother, Mr. Perfect. Flair in the Heenan camp is a perfect fit. Flair in classic Flair fashion derides Hogan, saying he's not immortal and whose championship is in the coffin of Hulkamania.
What did you think was going to happen? When I arrived here, I told Hogan face to face. He was short-lived, and by God, he is. Little babies out there now, tears in their eyes. Mothers looking at their fathers, wondering what's next. What I'll tell you, all these years, you believed in Hogan. You may have said your prayers. You may have taken your vitamins. You may have gone to the end of the earth with him. But now it's all over. There's one, just one world's heavyweight champion. And you got to know it's me.
What could be more perfect than that, champ? They said Hulk Hogan was immortal. Is he immortal now?
Immortal! Immortal! He's on his way to the hospital. Because the Undertaker picked him up in the tombstone, yeah. And boom, it's all over. No more Hollywood, no more limousines, no more little kids running wild. And Jack Tunney, this goes to you. Put that video distortion on the belt of the real world champion, and everybody starts paying the prices. In closing, let me say this. The WWF Championship belt now is in the coffin of Hulkamania.
Let's go, champion!
Classic Flair, promo-wise, on the top of his game.
He came across absolutely mental. You can see the spit on his lips and shit, and he was losing his voice as well, which made it seem even more mental. Just fantastic.
Hogan reminds me an awful lot of Poochie. When Hogan's not on screen, we talk about Hogan. And where's Hogan? What might Hogan be doing? Like, we got a new world champion and we're just talking about Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. If Vince hadn't been such like a coward in terms of booking, he could have had the NWO 5 years prior to the NWO happening in his company, with Flair coming in, I'm the real world champion, I'm the outsider, I'm going to take over. His reluctance to put him over and to make him look like a force kept it from happening.
So he'd bring in Flair, and I've got my mates with you. I've got Sid and Big Bully Busick.
Big Gary Busey.
I was wondering, like, whenever I see Flair on these WWF shows, I was wondering why I don't like it. Well, one is that he's got another company's belt, and that's just such a low blow, because
I think that's awesome.
It's a symbol of their company and you've got it. And, well, it's really not yours. The other thing I was thinking, Flair is the first guy in the WWF that they're promoting as a star outside their world. He is a ready-made star. Everyone else they practically built from the ground up, or the mid-card up, Texas Tornado from the mid-card, Randy Savage from the mid-card, Ultimate Warrior from the mid-card. Hulk Hogan's been there since 1983, so... Yeah, this is the first time it's like, hey, we've snatched someone from the competition. It's like, hang on, there's competition? Because I don't think we got WCW in Ireland.
No.
So I thought WWF was the world, if that makes any sense. So
I agree with your point about, you know, it's weird bringing another belt into the WWF, because I think a few years later in the new generation era, they brought in, like, the NWA tag titles.
Mm.
They had Rock and Roll Express or Midnight Express, and that felt really weird.
Oh, the Rock and Roll Express, like the Bedtime Express. state of them. There's fucking Johnny Mullet and Mr. Belding.
But it was a bit strange that Flair was a star from another company, but I think he was the only star that they could have brought in from another company that they couldn't build up again. He was such a big star.
Yeah, because everybody knows who he is, and if, you know, if he comes in and he's Ric Flair, it doesn't make any sense.
He's the third Killer Bee. Mean Gene says that the whining Hulk Hogan is caucusing with President Jack Tunney. You get the horrible feeling that this pay-per-view was only a setup for this Tuesday in Texas, and it makes you shudder in disapproval. Mean Gene brings in Jimmy Hart's heel team, who've been patiently waiting off-camera. Since Randy and Jake are too busy promoting this Tuesday in Texas, it's going to be a three-on-three tag team affair tonight. IRS gaffes calling President Jack Tunney Paul Tunney. Sean Mooney is with the tag team champions Legion of Doom and the Boss Boop. Animal says he's grand with Tunney's decision and throws the Boss Man, who claims he's never taken a payoff. Which is true, actually, because he actually turned face refusing a payoff from DiBiase when Jake had the $1 million belt.
Also says that he always pays his taxes.
Hawk says the heels will be reduced to the equivalent to a pile of soggy, soiled, fly-covered sweat socks. Hawk is incensed when Mooney cuts him off during his catchphrase.
We'll have reduced you to the equivalence of a pile of soggy and soiled and fly-covered sweat socks.
Wait a minute, I'm getting
Mooney, don't you ever what a rush for us, a bum trip for you.
It was great.
What a rush to the faces and a bum trip for the heels. And our fifth vignette in a row, Jack Tunney, who feels like he'll lose his job over this, between the snake biting fiasco and the world title finish here. He just sets up a rematch for a shocker this Tuesday in Texas between Taker and Hogan. Fuck you. Gee, this isn't a TV show we're watching, but apparently it is.
Yeah. At least they're not using a pay-per-view to build up a TV show. TNA using something you pay for to build up something that's free is worse.
Yeah. You've screwed everyone that bought this pay-per-view hoping for payoffs, which you've given them up till now. It's like, no, you don't. How? Will you pay for it?
Yeah.
No. Third of you might.
I don't know. Maybe if the title match ended in a DQ, you'd be right. New champion tonight is payoff for tonight.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. That's fine, then shut up about next week. Stop hustling me. I already bought this show. Cost me $25. Match number 4. It's another traditional Survivor Series elimination match. It's the heel team, Bo and Blake Beverly, with the Genius, along with the Nasty Boys, Knobs and Sags, with Jimmy Hart, versus Trouble Down Under, it's not an STD, the Bushwhackers, Luke and Butch, and the forgotten tag team, the Rockers, Marty and Sean. Man, it feels like forever since we've seen these lads. And here they are with three other pissant teams. Butch still looks jacked.
Yeah.
Sadly, no Genius promo before the match.
No Genius anything. We got to see him get in the ring and that's it. I was really excited, but it didn't last long.
I'll tell you what, Steve, I'll scour superstars, I'll find a Genius promo and splice it.
Yes!
Hold it, here comes the highlight of the entire week. Let's listen to it.
These unfortunate non-entities who've just been introduced are headed for a fate they don't deserve. For soon the Beverly Brothers will be facing this big test, and the cervical vertebrae will fail to serve. The Bushwhackers will follow on this pathway to paralysis. New victims of these men from Shaker Heights. The Genius feels no pity for the soon to be extinct, because that's the price you pay for wearing tights.
The Beverly Brothers, they're in from the AWA, that is all. The Rockers, on the greatest booking plan there is, the losing streak. And being off pay-per-view, they're on a rough patch, but they make up and things seem to still get worse.
Yeah, so potentially, Jay, the start of your favourite wrestling angle, the tag team breakup.
Where's Tito?
That's what I want to know.
A death spot match post Hogan. Who gives a shit?
No one, but it turns out that the match is incredibly important.
Really? We'll go through it. The Kiwis hit two battering rams and the heels regroup on the outside. Some drunken lout stands on a chair and takes over the shot and goes, hey,
it's good.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Butch works the crowd to no avail. The crowd are still recuperating from Taker and Hogan, as was I. I just, I'm done. You've given me an emotional boner. You've given you know, this pay-per-view was peaked. This is like when they do a match after the Royal Rumble match and King Haku and Harley Race are wrestling or something.
Oh, geez.
Or there's a tag team match. Who cares? The Beverly Brothers hit a tandem spike slam and job out Butch.
Marty hits what's possibly the worst monkey flip I've ever seen.
It wasn't awful. It's just the worst one you've ever seen.
That was awful.
It's not like he kicked them and they just landed on each other and banged.
It's more like a monkey flop.
Sean gets a backslide on Bo, who was doing all of the heavy lifting up to this point, and he's jobbed out. He can go to the showers. Sean had a nice clothesline from the apron and then a super kick to each one of the nasties. That was pretty cool. The Rockers start cleaning house, but a stray boot to Sean's face as Marty picked up Sags and nobs schoolboy Sean. And the Rockers, this is yacht, you must be loving this. The dissension. As the commentators plug the WWF magazine article creating such. Sean's unhappy. Marty's trying to get it work, but Sean is obviously more pissed off about this.
Fuck Monsoon. For calling the beginning of the Rockers' breakup. Fair, okay, they might have been teasing it beforehand, but...
He called it, yeah.
Yeah, he keeps going on about Marty's alligator arm when reaching...
Crocodile Dundalk? Boys, everyone wants him.
Would he have a feud with Skinner?
He fucking would. And he'd win.
And he'd take his arm as a trophy.
Marty's alligator arm, when reaching for the tag so Sean could tag out, he was not retracting his arm. He was clearly, his arm was outstretched, whereas Monsoon wants to read more into this or tell the viewers, oh, look what's happening here. And then
but
Sean,
who's tired is he on?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I made the exact same knowledge as Steve. Yeah. I was furious listening to this.
It's in the flow of the match. It's not. It doesn't seem like it's intentional. So let it happen itself. You don't have to fucking jam this down our fucking throats.
Unless you're Snooker.
Oh, jeez.
Woo, woo. Murder that girl.
Why did they make such a big deal of Sean walking out? Surely he was forced out because... You're but they make such a big deal out of Sean walking out, but if he was pinned, then he's not walking out.
What's he supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know? Yay, Murder. So it's 3-on-1, a valiant Marty versus the Nasties and Blake Beverly, the mustachioed Beverly. As Michael Cole would say, the numbers game catches up to Marty as Nobbs pushes over Marty's small package and the ref doesn't see Marty grab the ropes, he can't catch a break. The commentators get over dissension, smellness. And the heels win at 23:04 in a piss-break affair.
Hold on, 23 minutes, yeah, it felt long. That's the problem with death spot matches at the Survivor Series. They have to be long matches. A death spot match will be quick. Just let the crowd go for a piss and a beer and then come back in for another good match. Do you think Vince at this point was 100% behind giving Sean the big push? Or was he a little bit undecided about who of the two was going to...
Whoever turns heel moves up. It's not really possible to move up the card without flipping. You can't go from... jobber babyface to mid-card babyface. You have to flip heel and then elevate yourself, and then if you want to go to like main event, you have to go back to face or something.
Vince was 100% behind Sean and said, I'm turning you heel. And he was like, yeah, I'd love a singles run. And Marty was like, I don't want to break up this tag team. Bit of foreshadowing for what would happen with their careers is that one of them does well and one of them is Shawn Michaels. One of them gets one job and the other one gets 20 jobs.
It's
those 20 jobs.
Although he does have a great match with Kurt Angle about 17 years later.
In the best of Shawn Michaels tour. Yeah.
Survivor Series? I guess you might say that. What I'll tell you, Sid Justice, is this. If this devil gets a hold of you, brother, you don't come back.
Legion of Doom, you've got yourself a team. But look at the team that the natural disasters are on. We will survive.
You have about as much survival chance as a holiday turkey.
And Big Boss Man, you're a dangerous man. You're a tax cheat and a criminal with a badge. You're going down.
So if you guys think for one second that you've got any type of prayer that's going to save you from this, you're sadly mistaken, because in the Survivor Series, we will take no prisoners, man. We will give them to the devil himself.
Match number 5. Apparently, it's the main event, featuring no main eventers. Yes, a tag division main event, a 6-man tag. Sid has been bumped off the card. Now, it was supposed to be Sid leading LOD and Bossman versus Jake, and he leads IRS and the Disasters. And this was stemming from Sid making the save.
I thought it was meant to be Macho Man.
Macho Man isn't reinstated yet. He only got reinstated after he bought the pay-per-view.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Stemming from Sid making the save at Macho and Liz's wedding reception. Do you remember, with the tiny deck chair? But Sid tore his biceps 3 weeks before the Survivor Series. So the heels teased the fans that it would be 4-on-3, and the heels would gonna batter the faces. And yeah, they made you order the Survivor Series to find out. Haha, we gotcha. And then we're gonna spend the night plugging the next pay-per-view. They led the fans to believe Savage would take Sid's place. They said, here, call this 900 number and get him to reinstate him. We do reinstate him. Not tonight, though. He's fit to wrestle, but he's not wrestling.
Okay. The more you talk, the less I agree with my own statement about 20 minutes ago where I said this show wasn't that bad. The more you talk about this Tuesday in Texas and all the little scams they had going into the show, the more it bugs me.
I was thinking, the more you talk, the less I like you. Led by Jimmy Hart, it's the Natural Disasters, Earthquake and Typhoon, with Irwin or Shyster, IRS, versus the Big Boss Man, with Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom, and, yeah, it's just 3-on-3. Earthquake, wow, he is quite sprightly, especially for such a large dude. I thought he was moving around far quicker than just the time it took him to get from being on his back to up on his knees or something. So very quick.
Oh, he's so much better than Doug Chubb. I can't say his proper name anymore. Yeah, he's ruined.
To be fair, he ruined his own career. Boss Boob does his ream of fake punches from the outside, and the crowd give him a nice applause. Boss Man steps on IRS's tie. Good. That's right. Deserve it. But in the confusion, Typhoon hands IRS the briefcase, and he clocks Trailer and gets the 3. Big Boss Man's out, and the commentators put it over really well. Man, this is a huge loss. The Disasters, in general, pick off Animal as the weaker member of LOD. That was interesting.
Well, Animal was always my favourite. He wasn't as much of a talker, but he was fucking built. I know Hawk was as well, but this guy was...
He had a big barrel belly on him. I always thought Hawk was the better out of him.
He's
stout,
you know.
Jay, you're going to have to make the...
Who's better?
Yeah.
Well, I like Animal better.
Really?
Yeah. I think maybe it's...
I suppose he did
back,
have that
I think
amazing run with a Heidenreich, didn't he?
Still got the room. it's interesting. I can't believe he's Johnny Ace's older brother.
I know.
Who is?
Animal.
That's Joey Laurinaitis.
No fucking way.
Yeah. They look nothing alike. No. And they're not built anything alike as well.
No. Nothing like, similar.
Laurinaitis is a soft-spoken, tall, you know, business-type looking dude. An Animal is the fucking stout carny.
Laurinaitis both looks and sounds like the chief in Generation Kill. He looks the same and he's got the horse voice.
The horse voice?
IRS tries a briefcase shot again, but KO's Typhoon instead, who gets pinned by Hawk. More dissension, fuck off, between the heels. But IRS and the Natural Disasters, they weren't mates before this pay-per-view. And you're not turning face, you know? So, what is this?
I have no problem with that. It's heels coming together for the hatred for the faces.
There's no reason for it, though. There's faces are, you know, happy-go-lucky guys. They're all mates with each other. Heels, they should hate everyone.
I agree with that.
Curiously, Earthquake leaves with Typhoon. That's a baby face move, isn't it?
It's quite touching, though.
I've got more compassion for my mate than I do for this match. Tell Dusty that.
Then fucking Irwin or Juiced are over.
Do you remember Dusty went to go rest the match with DiBiase instead of tending to his injured son?
Oh, Jesus.
You can learn a thing from Earthquake.
I thought it was a nice, touching moment, and bordering on comic tag team heel stuff here, but
that's a bond for a tag team.
Yeah.
Maybe the Rockers are, like, you know, reconsidering, and they're like, together.
You ready? One more, ready for it? Huh?
Together. That's always
give those men a record deal. That's all I have to say.
IRS is left to the wolves with LOD, and Heenan postulates that maybe the crowd will get behind IRS and chant, Irwin, Irwin. What a great heel comment. An unlikely, almost as unlikely as Triple H.
Triple H.
Fucking THQ will probably record our podcast for the next WWE 14. IRS gets trounced for a few minutes and decides to leave. Bossman has none of it and Rotundo reconsiders. So Animal suplexes him back into the ring and Hawk delivers a one-man doomsday device, which is just a clothesline from the top rope. It's a shame. If he was wrestling John Morrison, I mean, he probably could have done the flip as well.
Oh, yeah,
or Rikishi. I guess they were too fucked to do the millions of dollars doomsday device. So they didn't want to get IRS up for it. But Animal's a big, strong dude, no?
He's not really used to wrestling more than like 3-4 minutes, though. This is probably well out of their depth.
They complete the formality by pinning IRS as the faces win at 15:21 with LOD surviving, and pay-per-view finishes with a fizzle.
I actually enjoyed this match. Believe it or not, I thought it was going to be the worst thing ever, but I was like, it's not that bad.
Well, with the guys that are in there, pretty much all six guys I like. Well, Tug John being with Quake, I think, elevates him.
Yeah.
But on his own, not so much. Yeah, it wasn't the worst match on the card.
It was the second worst match on the card. I didn't like this match at all. I just didn't care. Like, personally, I was still reeling from Undertaker and Hogan. It's like, you've done everything. The Intercontinental Flair has been out already as well, so you've got nothing for me here. This is, if they had Jake and Macho in here, or even Jake and Sid, I would have been more interested. But just as a stepping stone for, I don't know, are they building towards Mania for the Natural Disasters and LOD? We're far away from that. I'm not that interested in seeing it. Not enough to make there be Survivor Series this Tuesday in Texas, Rumble, and then Mania. This is not a let's build for 3 pay-per-views and do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gorilla. A few moments ago, I left Hulk Hogan's dressing room, and I can tell you firsthand he definitely has the eye of the Hulkster. He vowed this Tuesday in Texas he would indeed become the World Wrestling Federation champion again. Now, I tried to get him to come on camera and talk to us, but Gorilla, he looked me straight in the eye and said, "Brother, I'd rather do my talking in the ring this Tuesday in Texas." With that in mind, let's go back to you.
Well, it's all gonna happen this Tuesday in Texas, bro.
Steve, did you get anything after this?
I probably did, but oh, I did! Oh, I did!
I did not permit.
I got an interview with The Undertaker. Mean Gene walks into a room and he says something, "I don't know where I am" or something. It's like, you fucking idiot! Like,
he's like, "Oh, we're in the bowels of the building. I don't know where I am." You're in the bowels.
Just ask your production manager. Yeah, so Coliseum home video, not exclusive, because the live pay-per-view apparently got it as well. Gene finds Taker and Bearer in a misty boiler room as they plug this Tuesday in Fuck You one last time. Cut to a camera that's inside a casket. That's handy. And Taker says Hogan's burial will be this Wednesday. Fuck you.
Hulkamania. It died at Survivor Series. Now, the only thing left is this Tuesday the burial.
A giant fuck you to anyone who ordered this pay-per-view thinking that you're going to get a pay-per-view. Because there is a difference between promoting the next show, like the Rumble leads into Mania. But this pay-per-view was a hard sell for an impromptu fifth pay-per-view, purposely removing angles from the series to place it at this Tuesday in Texas. So it's basically DLC for a Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, and so that closes out the show. So, let's head to the aftermath and give out about it. Any thoughts on the show? What do you think?
Thought it was mostly poor. I enjoyed the first match. Not much else. No. The last match wasn't that bad. The title match, as I was saying already, was in a terrible place on the card, in my opinion. They were just doing it to plug the rematch afterwards. Awful. And I have a good mind not to watch Tuesday in Texas as a result.
Coming up next, Tuesday in Texas!
I quite enjoyed the Gravest Challenge. I love the fact that they lifted the embargo on having no singles matches on pay-per-view because Survivor Series definitely needed it. It was a gun to the head having to watch these nonsensical, lump them in tag matches with no solid finishes. But I actually think the match was over too quickly. It was only like 13 minutes. I could have watched that for another 10 minutes. I enjoyed it, I think.
Oh, another 10 minutes of that mouth hold.
Oh, get in. They didn't lose the crowd. Well, the Coliseum, the crowd.
The spiced crowd.
Did they lose the crowd on the live version?
Well, Hogan never had the crowd. It was a heated crowd, but it wasn't a Hogan crowd.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't care for most of the matches here. Flair, it was great to see him, but I thought he wasn't showcased in the limelight that he deserves. Hopefully at some point he'll get a showcase pay-per-view. That would be awesome. There's a lot of substitutions and compromises, like Anvil is out and Busick is out. I was looking forward to seeing him.
I love Gary Busick.
And Sid was out as well, through his own fault. And you got pay-per-view debuts of the Berserker, awesome. Skinner, you're a jobber, but I enjoyed it. And Beverly Brothers, fuck off. And El Matador, how about that? You know, that was fun. Heenan and Gorilla, fucking fantastic, on form once again. Will you stop?
Oh, he said it a lot in this show.
Why don't you stop?
Not as much as SummerSlam. Less breadbaskets and kissers.
I bought this pay-per-view, and it's just an advertisement for this Tuesday in Texas. It's so offensive. It's fine for if this was a TV show, but this is a pay-per-view. It was really mean, very mean of them. So, overall, thumbs down.
I wouldn't be as negative as you two. I'll just go over the things that I enjoyed on this show. Hogan not being in the main event. However, that's also one of the things that I didn't enjoy. Having a new champion being put over kinda well. I really enjoyed the Jake Roberts promo and Taker, you know, with the promo package with the pulling off the crucifix and stuff like that. I enjoyed the opener. The main event was okay. The Rockers match was okay, but the angle going forward, I think, is a thumbs up. So the only things I hated on the show were the booking of Flair and Slaughter match. So this is an average show for me. This is like the definition of 5 out of 10 kind of thing.
Cool. Well, we'll just give you a quick update on the steroid trial. February 91, Linda McMahon, Vince's wife, gets a tip-off that there's going to be a full-scale investigation into steroid abuse in the WWF. So they officially break ties with the drug-dealing physician, Dr. Zahorian, who goes on trial over the summer. And in July, they're getting all this negative press, and WWF sent Hogan to Arsenio Hall on his talk show, and he's expected to come clean and admit a steroid use. And, you know, because Dr. Zahorian mentioned him, I sold it to Hogan, sold it to Vince, I sold it to Piper, sold it to Dan Spivey, you know. And he just said, no, never used it in my life. No. And the media had a field day. They pulled their hair out and they just raked them over hot coals and just blah, 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 wrestling a piece of shit business, you know? Yeah, anyway, November 91, 2 weeks before the Survivor Series, they instituted their first real, more stringent wellness program looking for anabolic steroids. But guess what? If you got a positive result, they don't care. You're supposed to, oh, you're positive? All right, just reduce them.
That's your baseline, is it? You know, it's like, okay, your ratio is like 17 to 1. But we'll just keep that as your baseline. Once you don't go to 18, you're all right, mate. Oh my god, you're 14, you're in testicular failure!
Terrible.
Even though nothing, there was no real repercussions, a lot of wrestlers would go to WCW instead where there was no testing. And yeah, no reprimand for positive results and failing to lower your TE ratio. They said positive TE is 6 to 1.
That's normal in sports. And Olympic testing is 4 to 1. Supposedly, just a really virile man can be up to like 6 to 1.
All right, let's take it to the wrestling is...
awesome!
Average! Face turn segment.
Awesome!
Superboy.
Your circuits are malfunctioning, Superboy. You know you were good in your day, but it's time for you to be replaced.
Replaced? By you?
Correct. And my first official act as the new Superboy will be to dispose of you.
No, I won't let you.
Like I said, my first official act as the new Superboy will be to dispose of you.
No!
All right, did you enjoy that? Yes.
No. Yes. No, I didn't enjoy that one, actually.
It was Lex Luger. Okay, so it's that time once again where we say goodbye. Episode 24 is in the books. Good stuff, lad.
Yep.
Usually it's the Rumble up next after the Survivor Series, but I don't think we can leave 1991 just yet. What do you say to reviewing this Tuesday in Texas?
He's already said no.
How do you feel about it a few minutes later?
Go on then, fuck it.
So next time, it'll be this Wednesday in Mexico.
You're probably going to have to put up like a map of Ireland but an arrow in Wexford.
Hulk Hogan's strap was successful, so he gets his rematch. But what a Ric Flair. Jake the Snake, has he bitten off more than he could chew? And if it was a fangless snake, would he give Macho's arm a good gumming? I guess we'll have to find out next time on OSW Review. So remember, you can catch all of our episodes, fuck, free of charge in an IMAX flavoured 4:3 full screen at oswreview.com. Or why not leave us a nice message? Yes. Subscribe via iTunes at itunes.oswreview.com and get the new episodes a few days early. So, it's a goodbye from Mr. OOC.
Alright.
And V1.
All the best.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you.